This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. We are at the top of the hour, Food for Thought with Carol and Tracy. Michelle is in for Tracy today. Dad is in the house, and we are going to, in a little bit, he's going to give some turkey recipes for the upcoming Thanksgiving holiday. You believe Thanksgiving is like right around the corner? I still just can't believe it. And we have ready, we've been talking a little bit on the show about Chef Patrick calling in. Lakes Region Community College, we the three of us were invited and had a date up at Shaker Village for lunch. So welcome, Chef Patrick. How are you?
Hello. How are you guys?
We're great.
Oh, I was so glad you guys came in. It was very fun. We finally got to visualize what I was talking about, you know?
Totally visualize
it's true,
it, finally.
I didn't have that concept.
Me neither.
It's beautiful.
Hard to picture.
I could see a big hall, like a cafeteria in a school before.
Most people think about it that way too. But like I said, we just had this great opportunity with Shaker Village, where that restaurant, where there was all the whole, you know, the Shaker furniture and the whole ambiance and stuff like that. So it really works out.
Very quaint.
And you survived, I can tell. So.
Of course we did. The food was delicious.
You know, it was delicious. I like salmon. That's like probably one of my favorite meals. And especially maple glaze, the way you guys did it. Oh my gosh, it was really good. That
recipe is so simple. All it is you take the fresh New Hampshire maple syrup. Obviously, you drink it out of the jar. But I mean, you know, like you just add some whole grain mustard to it and heat it up. Very simple. A little butter in there. And I'm sorry, a little bit of butter too, as well. So, of course, you got to get the butter.
That's very nice.
I wouldn't have thought maple syrup with mustard, right?
Beautiful. Comes out fantastic. You know, so
it was delicious. It was very good. So, why don't you, you've been on the show, you know, many times. And let people know, you know, it's Lakes Region Community College. You can check them out on the web at lrcc.edu.
Yep.
You run the culinary program, and it's a little unique because you're not actually at the campus. You're at Shaker Village. Let people know, like, what, you know, when they can go for lunches or dinner or, you know, that is all put on totally by the whole, all your students, which is so cool.
Yeah, it's it's all student run, and we're open on Tuesdays, Thursdays and Fridays from 11:30 to 1. We have a full course dinner, super salad, entree and dessert for $12. And like I said, it's all student run. Today, for the first semester, we have our culinary fundamentals class, which is our beginning culinary class, is what you folks experience. But today, like I said, is my second year, they're creating their own menus, our classical French menu today. So today we had a cream of brie soup today. We had a mesclun green salad with apples and cranberries and walnuts, and we also had apple cider braised pork. We also had chicken cordon bleu with a tomato sauce on top of it, lyonnaise steak, steak with like a little caramelized onion sauce, and then we also had a butternut squash and parmesan pasta, boté pasta, and then we had poached haddock with a butter sauce on top of it too. So more classical dishes rather than your own basic dishes, but it's all put on by the students. And like I said today, I had my students going out at it today, and they had to create their own menu. So it was an attempt to have them run the restaurant rather than myself. So they'll come up to, hey, chef, what do I do? I'm like, go ask your chef. Go ask somebody else. You know, so you see them do it, and then all of a sudden you can't take any more when they start putting things in there wrong. And I'm like, no, I got to do it.
So when we went, it was your first year students. And so today's, what happens on Fridays?
Fridays are also the first year students. So we separated them out. And then they're also paired up on the opposite of having the kitchen. When you came in, you saw the open kitchen there, and all the first year students that were cooking out front waiting on tables were also the first year students. They get an equal blend of coming in and cooking, but then they also serving, doing the front of the house and back of the house, being able to use the computer system, being able to cook the food, serve the food to the public. And generally, you know, like I said, it's a, you know, full course dinner for 12. We just get that for people to come in and be our guinea pigs, if you will, you know, so.
Well, we were most happy to be guinea pigs.
Yeah, it was very, very nice.
Well, thank you. I greatly appreciate it, you know. So, but it's fun. It's fun to watch, you know. Like I said today, you know, I'm watching them, you know, to try to put it on themselves, and you know, it's generally if you get the first year students that come in here, and we've had a good group of students this year, you know, you'd be cooking something, let's say potato salad, and they're like, okay, what do I do next? They're all nervous. I'm like, put the potatoes in the bowl. You know, that bowl, yeah, that bowl right there. This bowl, yep, that bowl right there. Okay. Now what are we going to do? Well, we're going to put mayonnaise in it. That mayonnaise. Hey, and I look at them, like, have you ever had potato salad before? Yes. Well, that's exactly what we're making, you know? So they get nervous, and then when they have to think about it themselves, they're like, oh, my God, what's going on? and you guys made a perfect comment. Your father made a perfect comment to me the other day. He goes, I see one thing wrong. As soon as he walked in there, there's six people on the line. He goes, you'll never have that ever again.
in a real restaurant setting. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, well, he had it right as soon as he said, he goes, yeah, there's like six people there. What's wrong with that situation? But yeah, it's a learning facility. But, you know, like I said, I said, you know, you took 12 people to feed 20, but that's okay. You know?
And they were all smiling.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, because it was easy for them. That's why we got to send them out to the restaurants and let them get going, you know?
Wow.
Now, people can find, like, you know, like if someone's listening and they, you know, may want to come and you know, have a lunch or a dinner, you do dinners on certain semesters. They can go to lrcc.edu and look up that, go to the culinary program and look up that schedule.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, it's right on the front page. It says Shaker Table. Right. And then they can also call, you know, 603-708-1189. That's the Shaker Table menu. The number, and they can make reservations too.
Perfect. Oh. And you know, for listeners out there that's listening, it was a beautiful ride to get there.
Yeah.
Just gorgeous. And I have not been to Shaker Village in years. And you know what? Honestly, I don't even know if I've even actually been there.
I never have.
I think I did when I was younger for maybe a school trip or something. But I don't remember. It is beautiful.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Really, really nice. You have a great spot up there, Patrick. So.
Yeah, I enjoy my view out my front door every day, you know. And I said, you know, people are like, oh, you know, I have stresses going into the office. I said, my stress going to the office the other day is that the cows got loose across the street and they're standing from my door and I had to push them aside, you know. So.
That's fun.
Yeah. So, but, you know, so, you know, I'll take that, you know.
Yeah, for sure.
Not too hard to
now,
take.
You have a two-year culinary program.
Yeah, 2-year associate's degree program, associate's degree and you get it in culinary arts, pastry arts, restaurant management, and we also have one in hospitality, which we're actually going to be doing with Church Landing over at Meredith. And then now we just started, and I think you guys had on today. Did you have MHP on today?
He's going to be on right after us. Although he sent Seth in his place today.
See, I got the connect. We're all one network now. See, I know when everything's going on, you know. So,
but you're watching us.
That's it. I got cameras. You didn't know that, but you know. So, but no, so we started our beer brewing certificate program that next semester is going to kick off. So.
That's fun. So, again, if there's somebody out there that may be interested, again, they can go to lrcc.edu and find out that information.
Exactly. Right on the front page, you'll see a picture of the beer brewing right there. You can click on that. You'll see a picture of the Shaker Tables dining room. You can click right on that, and then it'll come up with the hours, the operations. And then next semester, we'll have the full menus of everything. Right now, they're changing around, but there is the full menu of the basic culinary classes. But so
perfect. And before we let you go, just because it is right around the corner, unfortunately, Christmas, you have a couple of Christmas dinners coming up.
Oh, yeah, Shaker Village. I'm glad you mentioned that. So Shaker on December 3rd and December 10th. I believe it's December 10th, and you can find that on Shaker's website. But we do, they have Christmas in the village, and it's beautiful. So you see the whole village. They illuminate the whole village. They got different buildings with folk tellers in them. They got different buildings with magicians and the magic shows, and they really appeal to the kids. And you can walk through the buildings, still get the history, still get of the Shakers. You get that whole Christmas feel. They do it up really, really nice. And then afterwards, you come over to the Shaker table, and we have a whole Christmas buffet that we do from everything from, you know, sliced, you know, carving stations to you name it. So it's really a nice event that they do.
What's the timing on something like that?
Evening. Four to nine is what they run it. So.
Wow. Very nice. That's sounds very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it's, you know, they do a lot of good stuff, and it, you know, it just it's a win-win situation matching our program with the Shaker Village, because they're all about education. So are we, you know. So it works out well.
Perfect. Well, yeah. Chef Patrick, thank you for taking the time to give us a call, give us an update, and
absolutely,
we wanted to let the listeners know what you're doing up there. Hope you know, listeners, if you go, make sure you tell them that Food for Thought sent you, and I'll be talking to you soon, Chef Patrick.
Yeah, I know. I'm having withdrawals over here. I'm like, oh my God, what am I gonna do? All by myself, you know. So.
Oh, jeez, listen, you are so funny.
I was sad. I was in tears. I've been crying, and finally, you guys came in, and I was just like, oh. There you are. So you'll have to come in again.
Of course, definitely.
Absolutely.
So. Yeah, next time I'll bring Daryl, because he was pretty jealous.
Oh yeah, I gotta send him home with some stuff. So.
Oh jeez.
I'll bring it to you.
We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very good. All right, bye. Thank you.
All right, Chef Patrick, Lake Region Community College. You are listening to Food for Thought. We're going to go on a break. When we come back, Dad is finally going to give his turkey recipe. We'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Live on the World Wide Web, WTPLFM.com. Also, you can download the TuneIn app on your phone and listen right at your desk. So Dad, you're on, and you're quite the celebrity out there, because people are definitely listening, and they love hearing your recipes.
I guess so, huh?
So in lieu of it being Thanksgiving coming up, we're going to talk turkey.
Right, turkey. I was going to say, all right, yeah, turkey. I have to guide my little guide here, because I haven't done a turkey for a little while. I do know in my head, but this is in my own words, so it comes out pretty good. And I don't forget something. You're going to start with a 15 to 20 pound turkey in a large roasting pan with a cover. Rinse the turkey with water inside and outside, and you put it back into the pan. Please remove giblets from the neck cavity. Some people don't do that.
Forget. And
it has to come out. You know?
Sometimes you forget.
I know, but that's a no-no. You bring it out.
No, it's good that you said that.
Is that the ones in the bag?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they cook it with the bag and all.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Brian's. I've been in numerous homes. I said, what's that? She said, we don't know. It was there. We left it there. Anyways, you can wrap it in aluminum foil, loose-like.
That's what I do with mine.
The flavor did come out a little bit and isn't overpowered, and it's not lost in your gravy. And some people do put it in, but that's all preferences, you know?
No, I was talking about covering it with tinfoil.
Yeah, no, I mean the
giblets.
The bags, just put that in there.
Yeah.
Now, it's in a pan, water, then cleaned. You clean the cavity, your neck. You're going to add one large onion. I like it's julienne, so it won't go everywhere, and the ones that don't want onions can take them out of the way. Three carrots, peeled and cut, and a quarter of a whole celery, not the one piece. Be generous with the celery. Okay, ooh, lost my recipe here. Okay, how come it keeps moving on me? Okay, yeah, one quarter of a whole celery, cut in half-inch cut. Use half with leaves, more flavor.
I always take the other end.
I trim the end and take half of it.
And, yep.
Salt, pepper inside the turkey. You're going to do 1 tablespoon of salt to about 20 pounds inside. You can be generous if it's 20. Be a little careful if it's going to be 15. But you need that whole tablespoon.
Inside the cavity?
Inside, and then one more outside.
That's right.
So you're at two, and that's not going to overdo it.
Right.
Three would be salty, but it would be good, but not for everybody. Half a tablespoon of parsley. I use the dry or the fresh, whatever I have at hand. It'd be Thanksgiving. We're going to use the fresh. And now add 2 inches of water in the pan and cover it and put it in the oven for 350.
So you just put salt and pepper? That's it? Nothing else?
No butter? Nope. I never did. I don't. Because the fat from the turkey comes out and everything is great. Oh, you can play games. Sometime I've done it. I don't tell the difference. instead of the water, I put the chicken broth in. But you really
do that
can't
too. I always
tell
put
it.
Turkey broth in.
You know, you
water.
Look what you have handy and you just do it. Yeah. But I've never put butter.
No? Yeah, I always use it. Do you put butter on yours?
No, we rub it with butter.
Yeah, me too. That's what I do.
Yeah. Good idea. Yeah. Can't hurt.
How about lemon in the cavity?
No. Salt, pepper. That's all I do.
A little bit of lemon.
That's all I do.
See, I put garlic, too.
Garlic,
I
lemon.
Put a ton of garlic lemon. In mine. Yeah. You know, I guess everybody has their own different. Little,
oh, everybody has.
You know, yeah. Tweak.
Well, remember, I'm from the school of restaurants. So at the time, you know, at the restaurant where I was, people don't, you can't stray. Like today. Today, almost anything goes. You know, that your margin isn't straight on. I know if I put onions or green peppers in it, they can't have this. No, no, not just
pepper,
not just that in any recipe.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. You say, well, there's nothing wrong. Nope, don't like that. Don't like that. Don't like onions. For a while at the beginning, I used to just use granulated onion. And I still do. You can throw a tablespoon of that in there. It's excellent. It just gives more flavor without people saying, "Oh, that's in it." That's what I look by cooking. Now, you're going to cook this for about 4 hours, could be five, depending on that bird. The last 45 minutes, you're going to uncover for color and base.
That's the best part.
And base. Yeah. Now,
that
know
was
if
Jesse's favorite
to know
part
if
when
it's
he came
cooking,
out of the oven.
If it's cooked, you can check by moving a turkey leg. It will move easy, and it will not spring back in its original position. When that moves freely, you're cooked. And you're not overcooked.
Really?
That's my little secret I've always used. And meat thermometer in the thick part of the breast will read 170. 165
you know,
to 170.
I like to get, because the last couple of years we've done the fresh turkey, so it doesn't come with the automatic pop-up.
Well, right. That's what I say.
Right.
You know, that's how you do it. It's the leg. That's all it is.
See, I buy the pop-ups. You can buy the pop-up little things and stick it in.
Yeah, but sometimes they slip. You know, they won't go up, but, go up too early. Not a lot, but I just, what's so hard about going?
I know. I guess, I'm just not used to using a thermometer.
4 hours and start checking the leg.
I think it was 190 and I'll burn it.
No.
You know what?
Well, no, you're going to dry out.
I mean, I'd be just calling dad, but.
No, you're going to, you don't want to go over to 170. It's going to dry. It's 165.
It's dry. Right.
If it's been here 4 hours and reached 165, you take and cover it.
And, this year we have Daryl's family. Come on, we're not sure what's going on with our house. But anyway, I have a crew coming over. And I think this year I'm going to do mine like you usually do the day before.
Yeah.
Slice it all up.
What a crowd. It's stress-free.
You know? Then you don't have, because even like yesterday when I was cooking all that stuff,
it
I had
is.
Dad
it's
over
hard.
For dinner and mom over for dinner. And I only have one oven. I had to
Even
you know?
With two, you're juggling.
Yeah, I bet.
We have two. We juggle.
You know what I find out? If you're a party of 10, 12, 13, 14, 15-pound turkeys, 15 people, that's a lot of people. Yeah. And if you cut it like the traditional way on a table or before, you're going to sit down, by the time the last person gets there, I'm going to tell you that turkey's going to be dry. I don't care how you cooked it. So that's why I try to do that. I take it apart after it's rested an hour, hour and a half. Whole and slice it and I put it in a broth
right back in the juice
right back in its juice. That is so mouth-watering. It's unbelievable.
It is. It's so good.
And you get a nice fancy platter, then you still can take it and put it out if you want with stuffing down the middle of the platter and take that au jus with a big spoon or a ladle and just before they start just juice it up. It'll be unbelievable. It's something about it's marinating
if you cook
overnight.
It the day before
right.
And how do you reheat it?
Right on top of the stove.
Right on top. No
low
bring
heat.
To a boil. Very
just
low.
Just low. We'll cover it with tin foil for 2-3 hours. Just let it sit.
Very low.
Slow.
In a pan with the juices.
Yep.
Really?
It's
submerged. And it might take up two things,
right.
Like a long.
Right.
But we have Kevin from New Boston has a question. Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Not bad. Have you guys ever considered grilling the turkey? I don't mean deep frying, but grill.
Grilling.
Well, Daryl and I are new to smoking. We smoked a lot this summer and love it, and we smoked a turkey, and it was fabulous.
Well, the only problem with that, Kevin, is knowing when it's going to be cooked, because
I will give you a hint, because we've grilled for the last 18, 19 years now.
Wow.
Because when we first moved to our house, we didn't realize that the kitchen had one of those Gen Air ovens with a downdraft system, really kind of nice in the center. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's got a really small oven. And Thanksgiving Day, we get up, you know, get up early, get everything ready, you know, put it in the oven, realize the turkey won't physically fit in the oven. Because we had like a 26-pound turkey.
Okay.
Well, we were considering slicing the turkey in half and cooking half at a time when between the wife and I, we said, how about the grill?
There you go.
Not knowing much about how to grill a turkey, we found out that it's way, way faster. Because we started the turkey like we would have normally done at 7 o'clock on the grill. And by 10 o'clock, the turkey was done. And I mean done.
Wow.
It's about 11 minutes per pound on the grill.
That's interesting.
And you do, not get dry turkey.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, no, it won't be dry. I say dry because after we cut it, if you wait too long.
Right, but, you know, but that's the problem with a lot of turkeys in the oven is right. People basically end up trying
right.
to cook,
right.
and they overcook it.
Overcooking them, right. Exactly right.
And that exactly. White meat cooks differently than the dark meat.
Yeah, exactly.
As far as, you know, how long it takes. So
you put
doing
it
on the grill, it's a right. six-pack. It's a six-pack of, I want to name a brand of beer, but you can use your own. Sam Adams Cherry Wheat. You know,
right.
Three for the bird, three for the cook.
Okay.
And you baste it constantly. You know, every 15 minutes or so, go out there. You take your I don't know what that giant sucker thing is, what the proper terminology is for the turkey baster, it must be called.
Oh, the baster.
Yeah, you suck it up and you spread it over. And seriously, my wife does a big citrus, and it can be any kind of citrus. Usually we use a grapefruit. Shove it in the cavity. Just wash it. Don't cut it. Don't peel it. Just throw the whole thing into the cavity. And, you know, basic salt, pepper, and a couple little, there might be some parsley and whatever else that she mixes with on top of it. Nothing special.
Right.
And I will guarantee when you go to cut that turkey open, it will bleed juices. It will be
I'm
so juicy.
I'm going to try it.
Yeah.
Try it sometime.
Sounds
it sounds very
good.
Nice.
But we use, now you were talking about the little pop-ups. We've learned over time those pop-ups don't mean anything. They're plastic.
No, right. No, they don't.
So we use a regular
thermometer
with a digital readout.
Right.
And it just plugs in, and we set it. You know, my wife sets it for 165, and she when she goes out and baste it, or I go out and baste it, keep watching temperature. Once it hits 165, whether it's 2 hours or 3 hours, it's done. Take it off, let it sit for about 10, 15 minutes, and you will always, 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 always have
perfect.
Juicy white meat.
Thank you so much, Kevin.
Thank you.
Really appreciate
and
that.
And it frees up the oven. So you can put your pies in the oven while you're doing the turkey.
Exactly right.
Well, pies usually get done the day before.
Yeah, yep. Day before.
Yeah, but when you want to warm them up.
Right. Kevin, thank you for calling
in. Take care.
We appreciate
Thank you.
And, Dad, you have another call from Paul from Dumbarton. Hi, Paul.
Hey. Hi, Carol. Hi, George. George, I think I talked to you last year about trying your turkey breast side down first so all the juices run to the breast, and then the last hour flip it over to crush the breast. Have you tried that?
It has. It's perfectly okay. Make sure you put a rack in the bottom so it won't be on any form of direct heat. Yeah, sounds great. I have tried it. I've tried it by, you know, at someone's home.
Well, no, didn't Brian do it by accident?
I was at my son's house, and I says, you cooked it upside down. Oh, he said, I didn't know which side was which. And I'm going to tell you, Paul, turkey was very good and very juicy.
Yeah, it is. It's because all the fatties toward the bottom of that turkey just find its way to the breast meat and makes it so much more juicy
and
tender.
It really makes sense, and the brown meat drips down over. You know, it's excellent.
Yep. Good.
Yep. Good.
Well, thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good afternoon.
Yep.
You too. Thank you. You know, this is kind of funny. You get Kevin from New Boston, Paul from Dumbarton.
Wow.
I'm moving to New Boston.
Yeah,
I love it.
And you know what? We're going to say a quick hello. We have to take one more break. We're going to say a quick hello to Seth Simonian. He is of Hophead United. He is in today for MHP. So welcome on, Seth.
Thank you so much for having me again.
Yes, and we're gonna talk beer, and we're gonna talk about he's gonna be opening up something in Nashua. So stay tuned. We need to go on a short break. We'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
It must be Thirsty Thursday, because Food for Thought is about to pour you a liquid lunch with MHP Untapped. Hang out with us while we talk with brewers and beer movers and shakers, discuss New Hampshire beer culture and events, and answer calls to our studio live at 866-823-1077.
All right. Well, in place of MHP today, we have Seth Simonian. Something happened with Michael. I'm not quite sure, but something with his schedule. And he sent Seth in.
Unfortunately, I guess you guys have to look at me today and you don't get to look at Michael. Geez. So I apologize for that.
No, it's all good. So you are from Hophead United.
I am, yes, from Hophead United.
And, okay, Hophead United, a...
Hophead United is a marketing arm that lives in craft beer. So we put on some very unique events. One is called the Hop Talks. Think of your larger beer festival just on a more micro scale. So instead of one of a few thousand people, you're one of 200, you're seated, you're served 2 6-ounce samples from 6 brewers, and the brewers stand up, they talk a little bit about the beer, and then you get the story behind the beer. Think of it like a TED Talk from a brewer's point of view. We consult an industry, a lot of the business side, but an array of different things. And kind of the third and final arm of what we're opening is called the Flight Center. And the Flight Center is a craft beer lounge, 48 taps, all local New England craft beer, wines, ciders, and meads. We also have a bottle shop, so you can come sample and then buy to go home. And we're hoping to be open in the next couple of weeks.
That's exciting. So that's happening.
Absolutely.
That's in the and where is that going to be located?
It's located at 97 Main Street in Nashua, New Hampshire.
Oh, Nashua.
How is this being funded?
You're looking at the primary source. We have some partners that are in the mix.
I'm just saying, because it looks like it's detached from the regular.
It is. They're two separate entities, but we're getting there. It's been about 6 months in the process. We've gone through the hurdles, as I'm sure
because
you guys know, opening restaurants.
You're promoting, but, yeah, right.
Oh, absolutely.
Right. So all of the breweries all around, you know, craft beers, they'll be represented.
Absolutely. The breweries that we can get. New Hampshire has some strict distribution laws, and a lot of brewers out of state tend not to come into New Hampshire. But we're aiming to try to bring a lot of the craft beer in New Hampshire that doesn't necessarily make it to southern New Hampshire into the area.
Okay. Now, where, I don't know Nashua too. I mean, I know where places are. I don't know the numbers of the streets, but like MTs, what?
So we're probably 3 blocks closer towards the river, towards like Peddler's Daughter.
Okay, so down. Okay,
I gotcha.
Okay.
We're if you know where the Nashua Garden is, we're 3 or 4 doors down from the Nashua Garden.
Okay. Walk me in the door and, you know, walk us through the door and tell us what we may see and experience.
It's a very different atmosphere than what you'd get going into a normal bar or a lounge, right? So we're trying to build off of kind of the Starbucks or Panera perspective of offering an inviting, warm environment that allows you to come and either sit down, do some work, enjoy a beer, come in before dinner with your party so you're not fighting over a loud bar conversation. But when you walk through the door, the first thing you see, and the reason it's called the Flight Center, is I have a heavy aviation background, and then you also have a flight of beer, so it kind of plays well together. You see a big false window that has a 50-foot vinyl of a 747 landing at night, so it looks like you're looking out over a runway. It's stepped up onto a platform. There's about 90 seats in a lounge section, and it's very much so a modern type environment. We have Edison bulbs that are hanging from the ceiling. We have some light splashing on that vinyl, and one of our partners is an artist. He actually owns the speakeasies in Nashua and Manchester.
Lou,
yep, absolutely. And Lou's going to draw the history of aviation for us on the opposite wall.
He's awesome.
He is. He does a lot of great work. And then you come in and you just have a tremendous amount of beer available to you, and ciders and meads and wines that you might not normally have the chance to drink. So our goal for our opening weekend is we will have 48 beers from 48 different New Hampshire breweries on tap to open with. And that'll evolve and change as time right. progresses. But to open, we really want to give a splash of what New Hampshire beer is about.
That is so cool.
Very cool.
And, you know, I'm not a big beer drinker. I say this at every MHP episode. But I get into, just like, you know, when we're talking to a sommelier, you know, just people that know beer and going and doing a flight. I love doing that
awesome.
The best.
Yep.
You know, you really, you know, and it's funny when you... You know, versus just on a hot summer day, drinking down a beer. You know, really sitting and looking at it and smelling it,
or trying a whole beer and not liking it, and now you got this whole beer
right.
that you have to pay for. Versus getting five or six from the flights and tasting them.
Definitely.
That's what's awesome.
And just
yeah.
the different, you know, different flavors that you
yeah.
experience.
Any food in here?
Yeah, we will have food.
I was going to say that too.
Similar to the conversation we're having, you know, we're not aiming for the major dinner business that exists on Main Street.
No.
Our food's going to be of high quality, high end. It's going to pair well with the beer. You know, we'll have a really strong lunch menu, but as it comes more into the dinner crowd, we'll have a list of high quality appetizers
like
bacon wrapped scallops,
tapas.
And we'll have a dessert menu that's
for people to come after.
Built in with the beer. So a lot of our desserts will be made with the beer as a private ingredient.
Yeah, sounds
what
nice.
Is the name of this establishment?
The Flight Center.
Oh,
it is the Flight Center, yes.
I like that.
And when does it open?
It'll be open in about 2 weeks. We're hoping to be open the week before
Thanksgiving.
But we may push a little bit more into the Thanksgiving
week. Perfect.
Sounds great.
Big...
Sounds like something I want to see.
Right?
Experience.
Well, we'd love to have you guys down.
Yeah.
Now, is it just going to be beer? Or is there going to be other spirits?
So we have a wine and beer license.
Okay.
We won't have hard liquor, but we will have wines, ciders, and meads as well.
Okay.
So you'll have an array, you know, for those who don't prefer not to drink beer or are out of that scene and they like ciders or wines. We'll have an array to draw in the population as well.
Right. Very interesting.
Yeah.
I'm kind of excited.
Yeah.
I'm not kind of. I am excited.
You described it very well.
Yeah.
And
we
also have a bottle shop. So we're one of a small number of, I guess, operations out there today that are going for a combination license, which New Hampshire very recently put out so that we can sell to go and on premise in the same building.
Sell to go.
So you're able to come in, taste, sample, and then also buy to go home
like,
with.
Right. You know, I really like that beer. I'm going to buy a 6-pack, take it home.
Exactly.
Right. You know who does that too is right across here. Thirsty Moose.
Yep. They have the ability to sell to go out of there for.
That's you don't see that.
What do you call those brown bottles that you can
growlers?
Growlers. Yeah. You can have those?
Unfortunately, no. So New Hampshire's liquor laws sort of predate prohibition. So they're very, very unique, and they're not well suited to today's environment. In most states, you're able to actually fill growlers from a bar, from a tap. But in New Hampshire, in order to fill a growler, that growler has to be filled at the place of which it's manufactured if it's a labeled growler.
So unless you are actually
if I'm brewing the
beer on that premise, that's the only beer you can put in a growler.
Exactly.
Why?
I know.
I mean, that's weird.
There's a lot of unique pointed pieces to New Hampshire.
Well,
there
New
are
Hampshire's
all
like
states.
That.
All states are. Oh, they have their own.
Yeah,
their individual
changed
nuances.
A lot. New Hampshire's getting better.
It is. It definitely is getting better. Part of Hophead United, I consult across all of New England, helping people schedule and plan beer festivals and walking them through the laws and the licensing and what they need to have. And you just find all these little nuanced pieces of information that exist everywhere.
Okay, so Hophead United, is this your full-time job?
No. If you really look at it, I kind of have three jobs.
This is passion.
I have a day job.
Well, that's
where...
why I'm curious.
Yeah,
like, how did that get, how did Hophead United come about?
Yeah, so I have some friends that are in industry, and I was helping out at a large beer festival with them, and they were kind of complaining the whole time about it. You know, we're promised we're going to have FaceTime of 3,000 plus people, and we have to pay to have a table here and we have to provide our beer for free. And it's just kind of a marketing ploy. A lot of events are run differently today than they were then. But it came out of my perspective in saying, you know, there's got to be a better way to support the industry. Because when you start talking supply and demand, your supply and demand are very high. But the infrastructure, whether it's in festivals or bars or bottle shops, is very minimal in comparison to what's needed for these guys to be successful. And they don't operate in a way that's geared to really help them. Most of these beer festivals come into play and they run the event. They ask for a table fee or they ask for the beer at wholesale or at cost. Or they don't pay for it at all. They ask as a donation. And what you end up seeing is the event organizers are walking away with $40,000, $60,000, $80,000 after a large scale of event. And the brewers are out time and money and product that they could have sold in their own tap room. And a lot of these guys are small. You know, they struggle to keep the lights on or get the ingredients they need or whatever it may be. And it's a truly a small business. You're balancing your checkbook every day. And when you have to donate, you know, a large portion of product that you've spent a lot of time and labor and money making, it can be difficult.
And otherwise, so that is a way for them, like, okay, I choose not to go into the beer festival, then no one will know your beer, correct?
That used to be the threat, right? Yeah. The threat that was out there was, we're giving you an engaged audience of 3,000 plus craft beer drinkers, whereas today's environment, you have beer trail maps and you have different organizations like Brew New Hampshire and New Hampshire that are really helping push the scene and bring relevance into the world. You have different individuals like myself that are out there trying to help grow the industry, because as the industry grows, we grow with it. So there's been a shift in play and how it goes. And a lot of these brewers today choose not to participate in the larger festivals for those reasons. And that's one of the reasons why we run the Hop Talks, is to really help support and grow the industry, but also allow them to get their story out there, because that's part of the appeal of craft beer today, is the story that's behind the beer and linked to the brewer and their ability to relay that story.
I love when you ask them how they come up with the names. I love the stories. And they're so well thought out. Like, I mean, Michael Hubley Pierce, oh my goodness. The names of his beers are just so cool. Like, they all have a prime...
A musical theme
purpose,
to it.
Absolutely. Reason, everything is thought out. It's really, really cool. For those of you just tuning in, you are listening to The Pulse. It's Food for Thought with Carol and Tracy. Michelle is in for Tracy. We have Dad in the house. We're also here with Seth.
I do it all the time.
Seth Simonian of Hophead United. And stay tuned, because in a couple of weeks, he's going to be opening up the Flight Center, which sounds really, really cool in Nashville. You said 97 Main Street.
97 Main Street. And we are hiring. So if any of you are out there in the craft beer world looking for a job or looking to get in, please find us on Facebook or on the internet.
And very knowledgeable, very well-spoken and very knowledgeable about your craft. I did notice. Yeah.
So let's talk about, because when we were on break, we were talking a little bit about, well, obviously it's a food show, so we're talking about food and cooking. So I'd like you to share with the listeners your experience with cooking with beer.
Yeah, absolutely. So I tend to use skunked beer, a beer that's been sitting in my refrigerator for a period of time that's no longer suitable to drink, to cook with, because the flavor profile is still there. There's still a lot of uniqueness to that beer. And when you boil it down, you're going to get to the core ingredients, right? So whether it's marinating meat or cooking like a kielbasa in a slow cooker, or adding it into a slow cooker meal, it can add a lot of different flavor to it. One of my favorite beers to cook with is an Oktoberfest style beer, because of some of the unique flavor that it brings into the food, depending on the type of food. So you can find some real unique traits to particular beers, just like wines. You know, if there's a particular type of wine that you like and you choose to cook with it, you may find that it completely changes the food in some way, shape, or form. And beer can do the same. And what you saw, kind of the wine renaissance of the late 80s, early 90s, is what you're seeing in beer today, with this array of hops and variety of ingredients that these guys are utilizing today and leveraging today. It opens up a world for food.
Like Marcella, it's all about the wine. You know, it's got a unique character.
And if you have a chance, I mean, I know once a month, the New England Tap House in Hooksett has a beer pairing dinner that they pair with a different local New Hampshire brewer. And all the food is based around that beer, and the ingredients include some of the beer. So you're starting to see restaurants even incorporate it more and more today.
Yeah, beer pairings. I mean, who would have ever thought that? You heard about the wine pairings for so long. And I have a question for you. What would be in your fridge right now as far as beer? What is your beer profile? Like, let me ask
what
you this.
What would be in my fridge?
This is probably a crazy question. I'm sure it is. Is there Budweiser in your fridge?
Believe it or not, I probably have a couple of Bud Lights kicking
really?
Around my fridge. I have some. I have some friends that's
Bud
their preference popular. To drink.
Yeah. You don't hold that against them.
Beer is beer, and I mean you start you.
Yeah.
Are we on break?
We have a minute.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
So beer is beer, right? And the beer industry today, when you start segmenting it into craft and big beer or whatever, we're in a beer world. And when all beer is doing well, all beer is doing well. So whether it's Bud Light or craft or your favorite choice, you know, you can't hold it.
Right.
It's a personal taste. And you're not going to change everybody's mindset or
smart
preference, but you can help them along.
Very well said. Well, that is the end of Food for Thought. We will see. It goes by fast, doesn't it?
It does go by fast.
I just saw it on the clock.
It's like, cool.
You are listening. We'll see everybody next week. And Ken Kale's up next, Kale and Company. So we'll see everybody next week. Bye.